everyone, and welcome back, not just to the Damage Report, but the Damage Report on a Friday. Like chocolate and peanut butter, they just go together so well. And we're gonna add one more fun ingredient to the mix. You've got me, you're probably thinking, hey, when's Brett gonna be back? I know not that many of you are thinking that, but probably a few someday. For now though, you know what we have? A special treat. We are joined once again, Bridget Todd. Bridget, how's it going?
It's going so well. I'm so excited to be here. A great way to start my weekend.
We're gonna have fun here. We're gonna be talking on the first hour of the Young Turks in a little bit. So that's gonna be exciting. I know a lot of people watching this are probably familiar with you. They've seen you on this program and other programs on the TYT network as well. Maybe they listen to There Are No Girls on the Internet. If they're not familiar though, what is it that you normally do?
Well, I'm the comms director for a national gender justice organization called Ultraviolet. And I host iHeartRadio's podcast, There Are No Girls on the Internet, where we geek out on all things tech and internet culture and how it intersects with race and gender and all of that fun stuff. So yeah, if you're not listening, please check it out. We would love to have you there.
Awesome, sounds good. And we love to have you here as well. We'd love you slightly more if you were to hit that like button and share the stream so that people know that the show is alive. We've got 90 minutes now, a luxurious 90 minutes that we're gonna settle into and talk about a whole bunch of stuff. Is there bipartisan agreement on something having to do with infrastructure? And if so, is it any good? We'll be evaluating that. Dianne Feinstein, what's going on with her? We're gonna try to figure it out. Trump's doing bad stuff, some to journalists and Dems, some to his most devoted followers. This is gonna be a brutal story. And then we've got garbage people to close out the 90 minutes. So Bridget, I believe it's your first time throwing someone in the trash.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. There are so many people that belong in the garbage, so I'm excited to dive in.
That is definitely true. Well, just throw them in there. Don't dive in there. It's nasty in there. But yes, we're gonna have some garbage people, so that's gonna be fun as well. Oh, by the way, really fast update on a couple different things. One, you should already know this. You probably already do know this, but after our show is finished, you know what happens? Regardless of whether you're on the TYT app, on Twitch, on YouTube, it is time for Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie. So you can stay wherever you're at. You can go to youtube.com/IndisputableTYT. That starts at 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, and should be a lot of fun. Also, this is your last call, not for drinking, it's too early. What are you, on happy half hour? No, it's the last call for the Twitch pitch. If you wanna be the next TYT streaming star, this is the final countdown, as Job once said. You gotta get your submission in by June 18th, and semifinalists will be chosen after that. Apparently, a lot of good pitches have come in. Do you have one in you? We won't know unless you actually try. So go to tyt.com/twitchpitch to get the info on that. And with that, Bridget, are you ready to jump into this?
Let's do it.
Okay. Whoo, this is gonna be something. Jeffrey Toobin is back after disappearing from public view. Finally, he should have the first time. Disappearing from public view. He is back after being caught masturbating on a work Zoom call. And that obviously has to be addressed as he returns to CNN. So he and Allison Camerota had a talk about it, and boy, do I have some thoughts about this. So here's the introduction to that admittedly incredibly awkward conversation.
I feel like we should address what's happened in the months since we've seen you, since some of our viewers may not know what has happened. So I guess I'll recap. I'll do the honors.
Help yourself.
Okay. In October, you were on a Zoom call with your colleagues from the New Yorker magazine. Everyone took a break for several minutes, during which time you were caught masturbating on camera. You were subsequently fired from that job after 27 years of working there. And you since then have been on leave from CNN. Do I have all that right?
You got it all right, sad to say.
I'm getting mild Scott's Tots vibes here. So Bridget, they have to talk about it. They can't just be like, so what'd you think about Jill Biden's jacket? Well, I mean, not jacket. I'm not saying jacket, I'm saying her coat. What did you think about that? They have to address it. What did you think?
I mean, that was probably one of the most awkward few minutes of television I've ever watched. I think you're right. I mean, it would probably be even worse if they didn't address it. But I don't know that I've ever had this kind of public secondhand embarrassment before. It was the cringiest thing.
Yeah. It was, and there's get ready, hold on to your butts. There's several more videos coming. That was just the intro. And by the way, I'm not necessarily, I can't predict what the audience expects, but I'm not necessarily going to come out on this exactly as they might expect. That said, right off the bat, I wouldn't have had her have to recap it. That doesn't seem quite, maybe that's the most minor part of the story, but make him say what he did. Why does Allison Camerota have to say it and then have him sort of smiling say, "You got me"? Like, yeah, I don't like that.
Good point. That it seems a little unfair to make the woman have to go through the incredibly painfully awkward process of breaking this down. He doesn't even really have to say it. He just has to sort of agree that it happened. I didn't even think about that, but I think you're exactly right.
Yeah, so let's dive into the substance of this. Here's the next bit of their talk.
To quote Jay Leno, what the hell were you thinking?
Well, obviously, I wasn't thinking very well or very much. And it was something that was inexplicable to me. I think one point, I wouldn't exactly say in my defense, because nothing is really in my defense. I didn't think I was on the call. I didn't think other people could see me.
You thought that you had turned off your camera?
Correct. I thought that I had turned off the Zoom call. Now, that's not a defense. This was deeply moronic and indefensible. But I mean, that is part of the story.
Second most minor part of this, Bridget, he's doing a lot of like this. Don't just keep your hands to yourself. Visible, but to yourself. Okay, so Bridget, did you doubt, did anyone doubt that he thought that he couldn't be seen?
I have a hard time believing it. I mean,
believing what?
Believing that he truly thought that he couldn't be seen. I mean, I don't know. All I'll say is, you know, we've all been using Zoom since the pandemic. I think at this point, you know that when you go into a Zoom, your camera's visible. You know, if this is what he says, this is what he's saying. But I also think like I really want to push back on the way that he's framed it, that like, oh, it was just a moronic thing. You know, this is a pretty serious workplace misconduct thing. Like, it wasn't just a mistake, a moronic mistake. A moronic mistake is when you reply all on a group email. I really am uncomfortable with the way that he's framing this as a kind of a silly whoops moment, because it's pretty serious.
Sure. So I think we part agree and part disagree, but let's dive into it and let's see. I agree with you that to the extent that he is framing it as not being serious, he's both, I think, objectively wrong, and also it's not up to him. But I do think he needs to make clear, if it wasn't intentional, then that's an important part of the story that he needs to make sure we focus on. And I'm trying to figure out if we disagree on this. I just assume obviously it's a mistake, because the alternative is he was on a work call with a bunch of journalists and purposefully masturbated where they could see. That seems like the quickest way to, that's like a George Costanza, I want you to fire me sort of situation. Like that's, he's done then. So I just assume it can't possibly have been on purpose. Like there have been other people, there have been Twitch streamers that have been caught masturbating or having sex because they forgot that their, you know, camera was on or whatever. I have a friend, actually a journalist, who didn't know that her partner was on a work call, so she walked naked through the background of a shot. Like, obviously accidental things happen. That's not to say that it's not serious, but I assume it had to have been accidental.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't accidental, then we're talking about something like a complete.
Then it's insane,
right?
Like, yeah. if it wasn't accidental, it's Louis C.K. at that point. Like, yeah. that's crazy.
I hate to say that, like, I hope it was accidental, but yeah, if it was purposeful, then that's a whole different thing. And, you know, I know that mistakes happen. Certainly, I have been on Zoom where, you know, things happen where you wish it hadn't, or you're like, oh, that was dumb. But I guess I feel like even if his camera was off, even if things had went the way that he was thinking they were gonna go, it's still really unacceptable.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think we can all agree on that. And even then, you know, there are concerns of like potentially about, well, did he think that his camera was off, but he was still watching their cameras? Cause then that's kind of uncomfortable in its own way. Yeah. But I think that's a core part. Okay, there's a little bit more of this. Let's turn to that. After initially getting through the awkwardness of acknowledging that he was seen masturbating on video, Jeffrey Toobin and Allison Cam wrote a move on. Jeffrey says that he has been going to therapy and working to be a better person. He says, I swear to God, he said that he is volunteering in a soup kitchen. Good, I'm glad they need help. But you, like, are you volunteering with the blind too? Like, that's the most stereotypical, no, I'm seriously trying to change thing, which is good, good, do your volunteering. And then he mentions that he's working on a book. Don't plug your book right after you hide behind soup kitchens. Do one or the other. But anyway, and he's working to be a better person, which that's good. We should all be working to be a better person. But if your point is, it was a total goof, I didn't mean to, well, then why do you need to be a better person? That seems to acknowledge something else. Anyway, for me, this isn't so much about him, it's about the experience of the other people who had to deal with it. So that's where Allison Camerota moves to in this video.
I'm sure you've replayed that embarrassing moment over and over many times. Have you ever thought about what it must have been like to be on the receiving end of that Zoom call?
Well, I haven't just thought about it. I've spoken to several of my former colleagues at the New Yorker about it. And, you know, they were shocked and appalled. I think they realized that this was not intended for them. I think they realized that this was something that I would immediately regret, as I certainly did. And it was then, it was that day that I began apologizing. And that is something that I have tried to continue to do both publicly and privately, you know.
Okay, and so look, Bridget, he goes on and he talks about bad apologies versus good apologies, and he keeps apologizing. It actually gets a little bordering on pathetic at one point. But anyway, he's really apologizing and everything, and I have no doubt that he would very much like to be able to exist in the public view again. So I buy the apology or whatever. But what do you think about that? What do you think about what should be the continuing consequences? There's already been consequences. He lost his magazine job. He was off CNN for like 7 months. What do you think about the continuing consequences?
Well, I would first want to make sure that there is some very deep, meaningful, like workplace appropriateness conversations and trainings, because clearly this is not somebody who knows how to conduct themselves in a professional setting. So, I mean, I think we should be talking about, I guess I'll put it this way. In the Me Too era, we have gotten so many different kinds of men behaving badly who then make some sort of apology. Sometimes they're kind of good apologies, sometimes they're bad apologies. But I think that just making a public apology and sort of falling all over yourself to you know, apologize verbally or in a statement or whatever, that does not kind of absolve you of this kind of wrongdoing. You know, he talks about volunteering at a soup kitchen. I need him to connect those two for me. Like, what does a soup kitchen have? Look like workplace masturbation, like, you know, I think throwing the book in there is a little bit questionable, as you said. I would like to have a deeper conversation about what, in fact, the consequences, you know, other than losing his, you know, New Yorker job, what the consequences actually look like. You know, just taking a little vacation from the public eye is not necessarily consequences. Like, plenty of people live lives without having television shows or without having cushy media jobs. And so I appreciate that he's in a place where he is apologizing, but for me, it's just not enough. I feel that, you know, and again, like thinking about the other coworkers, like how would you ever feel safe getting on a Zoom with him, you know, if his camera's off, like what is he doing? I think these are all questions that need to be answered by him, because he's the one that messed up.
That's true, that's true. Yeah, it is sort of weird though that like, one of the consequences so far has been out of the public eye, when that would have helped him avoid all of this if he had just nailed that part to begin with. I agree. I don't know. Like if you, so I don't know if they have to do Zoom calls anymore or whatever, but like, yeah, what would the other employees be thinking at that point? I don't know, but then, and we don't have time to delve into all this. I also think like, so what would have happened if he was newly hired as a person on air and wasn't a senior person? Or what if he was a a producer that was on one of these joint calls or whatever and had done it. What, like, I don't know. I wonder about all of these things. And it also seems sort of weird that, like, especially as you pointed out, you know, there's been a lot of forms that this, like, bad behavior has come in. Like, some of them, as we sort of alluded to earlier, is intentionally forcing someone to watch you masturbate. And, like, some of those people haven't faced the consequences that he did for the probably accidental, but still obviously wildly inappropriate masturbating. So I don't know, it just, I will say, like, there are other people that can do that job. It's not like any one person is indispensable to the world, and the world is done if you can't have that person's political take or whatever. I don't know. It's a weird time. Having him on at all is so weird to talk about it. I don't know. No, yeah. Like, okay, so I appreciate on YouTube if you don't find this so interesting, whatever, and you're saying to move on, but, like, this intersects with a lot of stuff about what's appropriate, what consequences there should be, intersecting with all of us working from home during the pandemic, and that caused a lot of issues. Some of them were just cute, someone's toddler walking in the background, some of them not so much. So anyway, those are my thoughts. Okay, so let's see. You know what, we're gonna go to our first break just a little bit earlier, so we have a lot of time to talk about the back and forth over infrastructure, the filibuster. Feinstein decided to take some of the heat off of Manchin by being one of the worst senators recently. So, okay, we're gonna move to that now. If you were in that for that social break, Bridget, that was very nice of you, but no TYT people in the future. We're gonna make this tough.
Oh.
Anyway, thank you. What we are also gonna do is return to the news. So let's move on to this next topic. They've been saying it couldn't be done. A bipartisan agreement over infrastructure. Well, I would respond to there, it couldn't be done with, perhaps it shouldn't be done. And we'll see now, because apparently 10 bipartisan group of senators have announced that they've come up with a deal, and we're gonna give you details on it. The first detail is that we're gonna get a statement about it from one of the members of the group, Senator Kyrsten Sinema. So just to give you a bit of an idea about what's likely to be on the bill and what's not, she's involved in the group. So Senator Sinema had this to say: our group comprised of 10 senators, 5 from each party, which, by the way, let's just acknowledge that's not even enough to actually get it passed with the filibuster existing if there's only 5 Republicans on board, but we'll return to that. Has worked in good faith, no you didn't, reached a bipartisan agreement on a realistic compromise. There's little I trust less than Kyrsten Sinema's estimation of what's realistic. So anyway, this investment would be fully paid for, would not include tax increases. We're discussing our approach with our respective colleagues and with the White House and blah, 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 blah. But who's in it? So you have Democrats, Manchin, Shaheen, Sinema, Tester, Warren. So that is effectively a group of, you know, give or take the most conservative Democrats in the Senate. And then on the Republican side, you have Bill Cassidy, you have Collins, Borkowski, Portman, and Romney. And they've come up with this framework that's expected to include about $579 billion in new spending as part of an overall package that would cost a little bit less than $1 trillion over 5 years, about $1.2 trillion over 8 years. It's expected to address a narrower range of physical infrastructure projects and to avoid the Democratic push for tax increases. Let's be specific about that. About rolling back some of the tax cuts that happened just a few years ago under Trump. They're not random tax increases that they just came up with. And it's not even fully going back to the level of taxes that we had under President Obama. They will also, and this is something we are gonna return to, suggest indexing the gas tax to inflation as one of the mechanisms for paying for the plan. So, Bridget, I've thrown a lot out there. We don't know how Biden is gonna respond to this, let alone other senators, but what do you think about what you've heard so far?
I guess I just don't know that at this stage in the game, this is what we actually need. I think that people need, I think in this time we need, like, bold solutions, bold plans, bold action. Frankly, I don't know why we're supposed to all get so excited that something is bipartisan. Even just the statement that you read from Sinema, so many little bells going off. But I hear these words like, oh, realistic compromise and, you know, things like that. It just sounds like she may as well be saying, this is a watered down piece of garbage that is gonna go nowhere. And I feel like that's not what we need. We need big, bold, progressive infrastructure. We need big stances. This is not a time to play small, it's a time to play big. And I just can't imagine that this is gonna be actually something that does that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that I don't like this. I agree. Cinema calling it realistic, well, what does that probably mean? It probably means it doesn't do anything about climate change. It doesn't go nearly far enough. It plays into the months of BS, hey, infrastructure is only a pipe sort of arguments that you had on Fox News that I'm obviously sick of. And I wonder if it even, if it will, could even pass, if it's even intended to pass, because as I said, it doesn't even include enough Republicans in it right now that it would be able to overcome a filibuster. Then you have the question of, would the House actually pass that version? Does Biden even support it? I mean, maybe Biden has already twice significantly cut his initial compromise, what I consider a compromise, a price tag of $2.3 trillion. So cutting it all the way down to $974 billion. And look, it's obviously complex. I'm assuming that's like for like in terms of the actual numbers over the same time frame. That's only like, what is that, like $200 billion more than the initial Republican offer? So the Democrats will have come down $1.4 trillion. The Republicans will have gone up $200 billion. So they'll have compromised 1/7 as much as the Democrats. When the Democrats control the White House, the Senate, and the House, does that seem like the way the system should work?
Yeah, like how is that a compromise? That's not how compromises work in my book.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. And look, maybe they can get enough Republicans. Mitch McConnell says he's open to it. Of course, you know, he could burp and it would be a lie, so God only knows. But Mitt Romney, you know, like potentially, ugh, I'm just so sick of the whole thing. It's right around where Biden said he would expect, you know, $600 billion in new spending above the baseline. For it to, you know, potentially be something he could sign on to, which again, think about the signal that sends to the various groups of Republicans and bipartisan, you know, mostly conservatives that are talking about this. He says he initially wants $2.3 trillion, but then he tells them effectively, you can get by with just $600 billion. That's, you negotiated with the $2.3 trillion. Why are you sending them information that allows them to undercut negotiators who might be pushing for more? And bear in mind the cost issue. It's not just what gets included, and this is going to be far less than what we'd be talking about. So I don't know, like the $500 billion that's supposed to go over, you know, over a decade to building out the EV charging infrastructure that would allow it to finally reach something like maybe kind of like parity with gas stations and would be necessary for us to fully switch over. I don't know if that's going to be included in there, but they're getting rid of the tax increases. So for the rich, for corporations, they're getting their money's worth with this negotiating group. But then what are they gonna do to help pay for it? They're gonna index the gas tax to inflation. And why not? Because the gas tax is a far bigger share of your income than it is of some billionaire. They don't drive 1,000 times more than you do. And so that is a regressive tax. And I understand that there are some environmentalists that think that the gas tax should go up to disincentivize buying gas cars and all that. That is an interesting philosophical point about the environment, but it is, especially when coupled with getting rid of tax increases on the wealthy, it is 100% making the bulk of the funding of this regressive in nature. Any thoughts, Bridget?
Yeah, I think that you're exactly right. And I just want to make sure that we lift up this idea that any kind of infrastructure plan that does not have meaningful climate change and does not address climate change in any kind of real way is just fall short, right? And so I hate the idea of continuing to let corporations and wealthy people really just not pay their fair share at a problem that they helped create. And so like I'm happy that we're having a conversation about infrastructure, but and I'm no climate expert, so I don't know the nuances of like what kind of, you know, provisions in this bill most climate folks think would be successful or not. But I just think that I want to get away from thinking about infrastructure as like bridges and pipes and really address the sort of meaningful change it could have in our society.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, later on in the show, we're going to be talking about droughts and the effect that droughts can have on electricity production. So these things are tied together fairly directly. Climate policy needs to be a consideration. And unfortunately, it looks like this bipartisan group is buying into the right wing framing that they should be entirely separate things. That said, let's turn to another aspect of this, potentially a fun aspect of this, which is for months now, we've been dealing with the fact that people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, if they want to, can effectively tank any piece of legislation they want, because there's the filibuster. And with that existing, you need to get 10 Republicans to have any chance of passing something. And so one or two Democrats, like, first of all, that's not going to happen. But even if it were to happen, one or two Democrats makes it even more impossible. Well, what's good for the faux centrists can be good for the others as well, because with this new bipartisan infrastructure bill, if it doesn't actually address not just the infrastructure crisis that we're dealing with, but explicitly the climate crisis that we're dealing with, then in theory, a couple of senators more on the left could also tank it. And they could say that they're going to as a part of this negotiating process. So we don't know for sure yet how these senators are going to vote, but in response to that bill, the details of their negotiations, Senator Bernie Sanders said, "The problem is this country faces enormous issues that have been ignored and neglected for a very long period of time. Even if you look at infrastructure from the narrow perspective of roads and bridges, it's inadequate. That's not me talking, that's the American Society of Civil Engineers." So the idea that after decades of work to get some sort of infrastructure bill, they're not even gonna solve the most core infrastructure concerns might turn off some senators like Bernie Sanders. You have Sheldon Whitehouse, who says, "I know of zero people who saw the bipartisan infrastructure excursion as the vehicle for anything serious on climate. Unfortunately, the grip of the fossil fuel political apparatus on the Republican Party is too strong for that." I would just add, and not just on the Republican Party. But we also have this. So here is a bit of Senator Ed Markey on Last Night with Chris Hayes.
It sounds like to me that they have a package which is climate denial masquerading as bipartisanship. We can't have an infrastructure bill in 2021 that doesn't have climate at its center. And any other bill that we are going to consider that does not have aggressive solutions to the climate crisis will just have that response, which I've been giving, which is no climate, no deal. That's the only way in which we can respond. This bill has to meet the magnitude of the challenges which the climate crisis is presenting to our country and to the planet.
That's not bad. No climate, no deal. Glad to have him and not Joe Kennedy. Anyway, Bridget, should they either in fact or send out a warning shot that if this is, and we need more details obviously, but if it doesn't actually address that crisis, that they will turn and tank it themselves?
I mean, with the caveat that we need more details, I say yes, and why not, right? I think that, I mean, I don't think it's helpful to sound alarmist, but Ed Markey is exactly right. In 2021, when you have parts of the country, you know, buying respirators and things like that for fire season, when you have massive droughts and massive heat waves, we're in a heat wave in DC as we speak, it's unbearable. I think it is a farce to put out anything that does not have climate at its center. I think he's exactly right. And I think, yeah, this is the time for forceful, urgent action, not climate denialism sort of masquerading as bipartisanship.
Exactly. I like that. Okay, let's turn to another topic, sort of related to this, not explicitly on the infrastructure bill, but it certainly could be a part of it. More and more past opponents of filibuster reform have been indicating that Republican intransigence over voting rights, their attempts to suppress the vote, and their lack of willingness to engage in anything like, you know, HR1, the For the People Act, the John Lewis Act, all of that, might change their stance and support some sort of reform. But not all of them, unfortunately. Senator Dianne Feinstein of the most liberal state in the country broke with colleagues who have said they would choose democracy and scrap the filibuster. She says, "If democracy were in jeopardy, I would want to protect it, but I don't see it being in jeopardy right now." She said she wants to wait and see what happens with HR1. Oh good, let's wait until they filibuster and it's dead. Then we can talk about it. When asked if there were any filibuster reform measures she would support, she said, "I'd have to take a look. Right now, nothing comes to my mind." And obviously there have been, you know, for a while, some concerns about Dianne Feinstein. So the specific content, what she just said there is troublesome, theoretically. The idea that she isn't even familiar with the potential filibuster reforms that have been discussed, and not even just, you know, getting rid of it entirely, but potentially lowering the threshold for how many votes from 60 to 55 or something like that, or making it a talking filibuster, or limiting the number of filibusters you can do, or any of these potential things we can talk about. Bridget, she just, none of them are on her mind. But more importantly, democracy is not in jeopardy.
Yeah, that it's almost sort of, it's very frustrating to hear her say that. I don't know, it's like, it feels like we're living in two different countries. The idea that democracy is not in jeopardy, voting rights are being threatened all over the country right now. Access to abortion is being threatened all over the country right now. Like, I don't know what country she's living in, but it feels very different from the country that the rest of us are living in, where democracy is very clearly in jeopardy. Like, I don't see how someone could see what's going on and not think this is an urgent situation.
Yeah, I don't know what it would have to look like for it to be in jeopardy. But I definitely agree with your point that we are living in at least two different countries. Yeah, I love getting these statements from these old rich senators, and they're like, what? I don't see a crisis. Well, yeah, if I were you, I probably wouldn't either, because I don't know anything that's going on. I don't know a single working person. I haven't had to do any actual work for literally decades, since before cable TV. Yeah, you probably don't understand it. So I don't know, maybe she's watching, maybe someone from her team is watching. Here's a little bit of what's been going on as you've been ignoring all of it. As of just May 14th, so it's not fully updated, but this is what the Brennan Center has. Legislators have introduced 389 bills with restrictive provisions in 48 states. These are provisions to make it more difficult to vote in a variety of different forms. 22 bills have already been enacted. That was as of the middle of last month. So just in about 3 months, 22 separate bills, 48 different states have been considering cracking down on voting. And that's what we focus on mainly. We've done a billion videos about that, but that's not the whole story. At the same time, and you can get details on this, Steve Bannon at MSNBC has links to individual examples of all this. They've been hijacking election administration systems in literally multiple states, actively undermining public confidence in election results. That's most of right-wing media over the last 6 months. Positioning far-right anti-election ideologues to serve as secretaries of state so that they're in position to overthrow elections if possible. Targeting poll workers, including pervasive death threats. Intensifying voter roll purges to take away people's ability to vote when they have every constitutional right to do so. Empowering poll watchers to intimidate people when they're trying to vote. Preparing to exploit gerrymandering to create voter-proof majorities. That's not a new one, it's just gonna get a little bit worse now. And laying the groundwork to allow officials to overturn election results. And I mean explicitly, in the Texas bill, it says if you believe that there was voter fraud, not even enough to actually overturn an election, you don't have to respect the results of the election. So all of this has been going on, Bridget, and none of this is enough to get through to Dianne Feinstein and convince her that something needs to be done.
Yeah, I mean, when you hear everything that you just listed, I don't know if somebody from her team is watching, but it's very difficult for me to understand how someone can acknowledge all of these realities and still say our democracy is not having some sort of urgent crisis. And like you said, I mean, I just want to lift up the fact that we're not necessarily just talking about sort of fringe right-wing folks. This is stuff being pushed by mainstream publications and elected officials, and we've just sort of accepted it. You know, Trump spoke at a rally in North Carolina 2 weeks ago where he still maintained that he had won the election and that it was rigged or stolen from him. So I don't know how she can say that we're not in the middle of some kind of crisis of democracy when all of this is going on.
Exactly, and 2/3 of Republicans believe that Biden won only because they stole it. Not that, like, I'm a little bit worried about things that happened, or maybe it had some effect. No, it's Trump would have won, they stole it, so Biden won, that's it. Elections can't be trusted. Somehow the party that was out of power rigged all of these different states that are controlled by Republicans. That's what they believe, unfortunately. And while we've been trying to focus on Dianne Feinstein here, you know, because we've obviously talked a lot about Joe Manchin, I just want to throw out his most recent statements about this. He says, this is yesterday, that things are going in the right direction, pointing to the passage of bipartisan bills cracking down on hate crimes and investing in tech innovation. Okay, I am glad that they got both of those bills passed. I am glad. Obviously, hate crimes always significant. The fact that there's been so much anti-Asian violence in America makes it even more important that we do something about this. By the way, some Republicans still voted against it, just I believe it was Josh Hawley, just look into that. The ability of the Senate to pass a couple of obvious, how could you turn against this unless you're Josh Hawley bills, does not mean that the process is working. But he says it's a process that we're all benefiting from. But in what way? So you got those two bills, but they filibustered the commission on January 6th. They filibustered reducing the gender pay gap. So when he says we're all benefiting, who's the we in that statement?
Is it that women who are still making less money to the dollar it's been?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're benefiting. I guess some of the Republicans who are ideologically quite similar to you are benefiting. I guess, you know, like your donors are doing pretty well. I guess that's you're benefiting. Not necessarily the country, though. So anyway, progress has been very slow on the filibuster, and that's only in a few people like Angus King, Jackie Rosen, but on others, Dianne Feinstein. So look at this. Manchin is in West Virginia, and he has to they say, well, no, it's super conservative. He has to be this way. Dianne Feinstein's in California, and this is the best that California can produce as a senator. Anyway, we are going to take our second break. When we come back, things have gotten bad. Did Obama expect it? We've got a recent interview with him. And then what was Trump up to? What was he using the DOJ for in the last hour or last year or so of his administration? We'll turn to some of the revelations about that after this. Okay, let's get into some of the political scandals going on out there right now. And this one was developing very quickly as we were producing the show and getting ready to go. But here's what we know as of right now. The Trump DOJ, they got up to some bad stuff at times, and we already knew quite a bit. Here's a new one for you. In 2018, they subpoenaed Apple in order to obtain the metadata of at least two Democratic members of the House Intelligence Committee. Okay, that may not shock you at this point, as well as their current and former staff and even family, including a minor. So not just looking into the personal browsing or communication behaviors of these members of Congress, which would be scandal enough, but their staff and their family members. So these subpoenas were part of an effort to find the source of leaks of classified information in the early years of the Trump administration. I mean, they clearly did not appreciate leaks. This is further evidence of that. Ultimately, the data did not tie the committee to the leaks. Apple informed the committee that the metadata had been seized after a gag order in the matter was lifted in May 2021. That's the only reason that we're finding out about this a couple of years later. The committee contacted the Biden Justice Department, which informed them that the investigation had been closed. So I'm sure some people will consider, well, what's the difference? It's not going on anymore. But it still seems like a massive breach of privacy rights, not just of politicians, but of private citizens that had nothing to do with any of this leaking. Wouldn't make it acceptable if they had been, but they hadn't. Now, anyway, while Justice Department leak investigations are considered routine, current and former congressional officials familiar with the inquiry said that they could not recall an instance in which the records of lawmakers had been seized as part of one, let alone people who just happened to be their family members. So, Bridget, what are you thinking of the Trump DOJ with the new information that we've had revealed to us?
I mean, I'm sorry to report that none of this is surprising to me. We know that the Trump administration goes after their enemies in this way. I think going after kids who had nothing to do with this, I think is a new level of scumbaggery. But overall, I don't think anybody is really surprised. But I do think there should definitely be an investigation about, you know, abuse of power and the way that, you know, Trump and his DOJ looked into his political enemies. I think that there should absolutely be an investigation.
Well, it's looking like that might happen. I hope it doesn't require a vote in the Senate, though, because that's probably not going to happen. So let's just get out in front of that. But anyway, we do have responses sort of that have been developing over the course of this morning to that. A little bit more information before we get to that, though. The records of at least 12 people connected to the intelligence panel that the Trump DOJ thought might have been the source of these leaks were eventually shared. Adam Schiff was one of them, Eric Swalwell as well. And so that makes it seem even more personal, the fact that those two particular congressmen were focused on, you know, I'm not related to them or anything. It's just that Man, Trump really had an issue with Adam Schiff, especially. I mean, Adam Schiff was one of those rare congressmen that got a nickname from Donald Trump. So the idea that the Trump DOJ was focusing on them, that's sort of a problem. Now, what's going to be done? Well, Adam Schiff, one of the focuses of this, he said Trump repeatedly demanded the DOJ go after his political enemies. It's clear his demands didn't fall on deaf ears. This baseless investigation, while now closed, is yet another example of Trump's corrupt weaponization of justice and how much he imperiled our democracy. I understand that a lot of people watching this probably are sick of Adam Schiff. I understand that. That said, it's still bad. It's bad when Trump did it. It's bad if the Dems do it, and do not write out the possibility that a Democratic administration might get up to something like this. Because when it comes to privacy rights and the weaponization of the DOJ, that is not out of the question. But it's not just Adam Schiff. It's not just people who are focuses of these subpoenas and these inquiries. Senator Ron Wyden is calling for an investigation, saying there must be a full investigation of abuses under former attorneys general Sessions and Barr. And anyone at DOJ who is complicit in these abuses of power cannot be trusted to continue serving in government. And then right before we went live, Nancy Pelosi said, the news about the politicization of the Trump administration Justice Department is harrowing. These actions appear to be yet another egregious assault on our democracy waged by the former president. I support Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff's call for an investigation. So, Bridget, it might happen. I don't know, what does your gut say about the possible consequence of that investigation?
Unfortunately, I am a little pessimistic about Trump facing any kind of consequences. I would love to see some sort of meaningful consequences, but I'm very pessimistic about it. But I'm also really glad that you brought up, like, I'm no big fan of Schiff, right? But like, privacy rights are privacy rights, even for people that we don't like. And when privacy is eroded, it harms us all. And so I completely agree. It is not ludicrous for me to expect that like folks on the left might do this as well, but there has to be a hard line. This is not acceptable for anybody, because if it does become acceptable and like if it does become the norm, it hurts everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm incredibly pessimistic as well. That said, I love going through the motions of democracy, like doing an investigation like this, knowing that nothing's gonna come of it. And hey, maybe they'll surprise us and there'll be consequences. Like, imagine if Barr was stripped of his ability to practice law. Like, I don't necessarily care about Barr's future, although I don't completely discount the possibility that in 20 years he'll pop up in Barron Trump's administration. That said, it might send a warning shot for future heads of the DOJ to maybe not engage in things like this. There have to be consequences for future people's behavior to ever change.
Absolutely.
That said, we've got one more scandal for you to close out the time we have in this first hour. So let's turn to this. I didn't know this, but apparently Donald Trump's birthday is coming up, and it's always tough to know exactly what to buy for someone's birthday. So he's simplifying the process for his followers, and he'll accept money, and he's not necessarily going to let you know that it's being taken from you. He's just gonna steal the money from you, apparently. That's actually happening. So this is sort of an update of a story we talked about a few months ago, where he's using these little manipulative tricks to scam his most devoted and supportive followers out of their money, this time tying it into his birthday. So when supporters donate via the website Save America's site, the website automatically ticks a box saying they would like to donate the same exact amount on Trump's birthday, which is June 14th. So if you donate $250, the website automatically opts them into donating $250 more on June 14th. It also, by the way, automatically ticks a box to say that the supporter wants to make their contribution a monthly donation, which is inconvenient if you donate $5. But when you've donated $250, $1,000, that is potentially a significant problem. And we know from past reporting that there are former now supporters of his who lost thousands of dollars, who in the course of just a month might have had $8,000 taken out of their account that they had no interest in donating, because they either didn't notice these sorts of things, or there's the belief that it possibly might have been done regardless of that. Those court cases are ongoing. But Bridget, this is pretty dirty. Like, they're already giving you money to sort of drain them of even more. Ooh.
It's bad. I mean, I hate to say this. I don't wanna blame the victim, but at this point, if you're still giving money to Donald Trump, This stuff is all public knowledge. It is a publicly known fact that Donald Trump scams his most ardent supporters out of their money. And for a lot of folks, like, you would really feel that. Like you said, $5 here and there, okay, maybe. Talking about thousands of dollars, that would wreak financial havoc on a lot of people's lives. And so I feel like if you are still giving him money at this point, after we have all of this publicly available data about the fact that he scams people, I don't know what to say. I mean, he scams everybody he comes in contact with. He is a scammer. If people have not internalized that by now, I don't know what to say. I do feel kind of bad for these people because I wonder, like, how many of them are elderly folks who might not really, you know, it's like, but that just makes it all the more scummy that he does this to his most fervent supporters. It's like, this is someone who is just completely amoral.
Yeah, and to keep it as the same donation, like if they, I have $500 to give to my God Emperor, and then to take 500 every month, like no, nobody deserves a $500 birthday present. Certainly not Donald Trump. I do feel bad for him. You know, I'm cursed by this damn bleeding heart. I feel bad for people who probably want me to die in agony. But yeah, and by the way, overall, we know, you know, the myth that his followers tend to be economically anxious people who've been left behind. Sure, there's a lot of those. On average, they tend to be a little bit better off than your average American. But that said, few Americans can afford to have hundreds of dollars taken out of their account every month without that doing significant damage to their family. Now, that said, there's a couple more little wrinkles to this that I want to get to. And that is that an analysis by The Independent found that Save America sent at least one text message to supporters every day in May, urging them to donate money. Ahead of fundraising deadlines, sometimes they sent texts just hours apart, which seems to me like a great way to get people to opt out of the text messages, because not like if you give, they're gonna keep robbing you every single month. And even then, they're still gonna be begging for more money every couple of hours. That seems like a lot. Then they lied about that too, with some of the texts looking like they were personally written by Trump or his relatives, including Eric Trump and Donald Trump, who remember said years ago they were gonna stay out of politics, or Melania. One example was Eric and Don Jr. It's so important that we're both texting you. Well, how does that work out? Does each one have a thumb on the phone? Are they passing it back and forth? Here's how it works out. Neither of them were involved in this. Neither of them even knows that it's happening. It's so, from top to bottom, so dishonest.
Yeah, it's bad. I used to be the kind of, I used to work in places where I sent these kind of donation requests. Every best practice of how you do this, they are breaking, and they're not just breaking it, they're like lighting it on fire. You know, the fake, you know, oh, this is just me personally texting you. The very intense, urgent, you know, I don't wanna have to tell Trump that you ignored him.
Not only, my God, yeah.
Goes against the best practices of how online fundraising works.
Yeah, my favorite of that was they would often do on Facebook ads. It was, we're gonna deliver a list of supporters to Trump. You don't wanna not be on that list. I just, like, you believe that they're like walking into the Oval Office at that point, like a big stack of papers, and he's like, where's Tim? No, that's not happening. None of this is happening. And look, you make the good point that a lot of people do things like this, not necessarily as egregious as the birthday thing or the, you know, like the forcing it to be every month, but it isn't just Trump. And so when we're focusing on this now, and when we were a few months ago, look, it is partially that I wanna get through to some Trump supporters and let them know that they're being scammed. Partially, I want them to stop doing this, but I also want this to be a thing that people think about for politicians other than Trump and organizations other than Save America. Be careful of those automatically ticking boxes. I want people to support politicians and groups that they like. Definitely do. I want people more involved in politics, but I don't want them to be scammed, especially working class Americans that are barely getting by and desperately need the help of politicians. What they need least is to have their last dollars robbed by politicians. So give if you want to, that would be great, but I don't want anyone to be obligated to do so. So be aware of this. Now, that said, that is all the time we have for this first hour. So all of you on the linear platform, thank you for watching. Those of you on Twitch and YouTube, we've got a lot more stories to get to. So we're gonna take a short break, but then there's more coming up after this. Welcome back, everyone, to the last half hour, the last third, the best third, they say, of the Damage Report. The linear audience has unfortunately moved on, but we've still got you, Twitch and YouTube. Thank you for being here. Bridget, now we can relax a little bit. And so I wanted to touch base with you. Did you come up with any favorite people?
I did. So my favorite podcast is called You're Wrong About. The host, Sarah, actually both of them, Sarah and Mike, are my friends in my head. If you listen to the show, you know they're always like debunking scams and sort of moral panics. Whenever I encounter something that I know is a scam, I just hear their voices in my head. So they're my best friends, even though we've never met.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, maybe someday. Thank you to everybody who already replied to my tweet. I grant you that I have a weird Twitter account that occasionally vacillates immediately between acknowledgments of US complicity in genocide and stuff like that to then, hey, what's a nice thing that's going on? That can be weird. I get it, but that's what you sign up for. Anyway, speaking of signing up, we did want to let you know that we are in our generally once a year sort of membership drive. Our progressive change machine, Be the Change campaign is going on right now. So first of all, if you're already a member, as many of you watching, especially the live show, already are, thank you for being a member. Whether you're a member of TYT, whether you subscribe on Twitch, whether you're a member on YouTube, whether my channel or TDR, that's awesome. And I absolutely love that. If you're not, now would be a great time because we have had a reminder over the past few months of all the challenges that face us as a country, as a movement. And to be sort of one of the media parts of that movement to try to signal boost good messages, good candidates, good activists and all that, we do need support. This last year was a reminder of that. It was a rough time. A lot of media organizations either shut down or had to do big cuts of employees. We thankfully did not have to do that because we have you. And we'd like to still have you. And if we didn't already have you, we'd like to. So consider going to tyt.com/change and finding out about membership, the different perks that you get and that sort of thing. So if you could get involved in that, that would be great. Again, reminder, if you're on Twitch and you're interested in potentially streaming for us, the Twitch pitch is in its closing hours. It's closing time, it's last call. Go to tyt.com/twitch pitch if you would be interested in potentially doing some streaming for TYT. We'd love to see what you've got. Now that's, by the way, really fast. That's the podcast that you mentioned. It's one of Sophie, the producer's favorite podcasts. So that's awesome. That's awesome. Anyway, with that said, why don't we get back into some news? Let's do this. How bad is climate change? Well, it's historic. It's coming to Nevada. Lake Mead in Nevada, the nation's largest reservoir by volume, reached its lowest capacity since the 1930s. The human-made lake is currently at roughly 36% of its capacity. So we've been really focused nationally on the pandemic, on public health concerns. That is definitely understandable. That said, kind of around starting this time, a lot of the country starts to experience wildfires, starts to experience droughts, and the pandemic has not done anything that makes those things less severe or less likely to occur. So we're gonna get into some of the consequences of Lake Mead being so low. But Bridget, this is a reminder. No, all of those problems that we put a lot more attention into before the pandemic, before that took so much of our public consciousness, that is still there.
Yeah, it is still there. And it's so important. I think that for a long time, we talked about climate issues like some sort of abstract thing, or talked about it like, save the whales or something like that. But this is urgent. We're talking about people. As we know, climate change disproportionately impacts low-income people, people of color, indigenous communities. And so it is a racial justice issue. It is intersects with so many issues and it's very urgent. So I'm so glad to see you representing it on the show. And hopefully if we talk about it with the seriousness that it deserves, we'll actually get somewhere with it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And it is very serious, but it's also serious for a reason that I don't think about very often when talking about this. So first the obvious one, then we'll get to the less obvious. First of all, roughly 1 in 10 Americans depend on the Colorado River for some of their water. And the basin also provides irrigation for more than 5.5 million acres in the Southwest. So right off the bat, actual access to water for individuals, water for agriculture, this is significant. And that, look, they're focusing on this particular river because they're focusing on this particular reservoir. But the drought is real. And we're gonna show you how wide it spreads. there are very serious concerns going forward about access to water for millions and millions and millions of Americans. So that's something that we don't necessarily talk about every day. But bear in mind that when we talk about climate change, we sometimes focus on the extreme weather events like hurricanes and things like that. This is the sort of less sexy, less immediately in your face consequence that is going to have an effect on lots of communities, lots of individuals. Now that said, there is another consequence, which is access to power. In normal years, the dam that that reservoir is attached to provides enough electricity for 8 million people. And according to one of the Bureau of Reclamation spokespersons, every foot of lake level decline means about 6 megawatts of lost capacity. The Hoover Dam's energy capacity has already dropped 25% by Tuesday. So it isn't just that we don't necessarily have access to the water, and that theoretically it being down to 36% now, imagine, you know, project out 10, 20 years and imagine what if it actually runs dry. But that is actually a very necessary source of electricity for a lot of people. And it's happening at a time where we're having this conversation about what our infrastructure priorities should be for energy production. I don't know. I kind of think this should be major news to help drive that conversation in a productive direction, Bridget.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as we said earlier in the top of the show, any infrastructure plan that does not center climate change is just not enough. And as you just laid out, talking about this water reservoir, it's like, this is people's actual lives, people, you know, how we get our water, how we get our energy. We need to be talking about it urgently and sort of pretending that it's not a real problem, pretending that this is not really infrastructure, or not talking about it because it's not as sexy as things like wildfire is a real mistake. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. And could, you know, just like with the wildfires, could result in you know, destruction of farms and things like that and loss of life. So let's give you a little bit more information what you might have coming up if you live in the Southwest. The record low reading, as well as expected subsequent drops in the lake, are almost certain to trigger a federal water shortage declaration later this summer, which would set off cuts in water allocations to several states. So that's going to be fun for individuals. Also, it's going to result in an incredible amount of political strife between different states. But it does let us act out if you've ever had fantasies of living in Mad Max Fury Road. We're getting closer to it. And by the way, let's just jump ahead to this map of the drought to show you how bad it is. This is as of yesterday. So exceptional drought is that darkest red color that is stretching across most of a couple states. And I'm trying to see, it looks like it doesn't quite hit us here in LA, but we do have extreme drought. So that's fun. Not as good as exceptional. I always want the exceptional, but that is a huge portion of the country, cities with millions and millions of people in them, and agriculture and rivers that feed, you know, actual, like, to get our water. So I don't know, it's so significant. And again, there's the sort of, I guess, the side effect or the silver lining that this is going on when we're having a conversation about how much of our, you know, focus on legislation, the budget, and infrastructure spending should be on climate change. But it's also, by the way, happening today. We have this bipartisan group coming out, and they appear to have massively de-emphasized climate change as a part of the infrastructure bill. I don't know. And even this story, like, we have an intern, Josh, who brought it to our attention. Great reporting on places like Axios and The Guardian. But is this national news? Is this to the same level as something like the DOJ investigation, which is serious? Don't get me wrong. We talked about it too. But going forward, the implications, I don't know. I feel like this deserves more attention.
I completely agree. I mean, it's so urgent and we're barely talking about it.
Yeah. Okay, well, that said, we're now unfortunately going to stop talking about it and start turning to a different aspect of science, which is the refusal to accept that any of it actually exists. So, this is going to be a swift turn from climate change to one of our favorite individuals here on the show, but let's talk about this. Marjorie Greene has been kicked off of her congressional committees. She is, however, still a congresswoman, still influential in the Republican Party. And she, in theory, when the Republicans inevitably take back control of the Senate due to the mismanagement that the Democrats are doing right now, could potentially be in charge of the US's stance on investigations and research into viruses to understand them, to generate vaccines and all that. What does she believe about that sort of research? Well, she was on Steve Bannon's podcast, and here's what she had to say.
You don't buy the argument to say, hey, the gain of function is all because we've got to take these viruses and we got to power them up to look for vaccines and to look for other solutions in case somehow they come up with this. You don't buy the logic of that. Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't buy it because I don't believe in evolution. I don't believe in that type of so-called science. I don't believe in evolution. I believe in God. And these viruses were not making people sick until they created them and made them into weaponize these viruses to be able to attach to our cells and make us sick. This has caused so many people to die all over the world. This is a bioweapon. People can call it whatever they can for research and to create vaccinations, but there's no need for a vaccine if the virus doesn't make the human population sick to begin with.
Bridget, thoughts?
I just don't even know how to respond to that. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, like what she's saying is so wrong, so anti-science. It's embarrassing. I'm so embarrassed for her constituents. It's difficult to respond to someone who just speaks in nonsense, and it's unfathomable. It's difficult for me to fathom that we've given someone like this a platform. It's just nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm gonna try. So first of all, to interpret what she's saying, part of it is you and I don't consume the same high grade misinformation that she does. So there's a lot of assumptions in what she said. She calls it a bioweapon. So she is so far beyond just the, hey, is it possible that some lab investigating vaccines for the coronavirus might have allowed it to slip out and that's how it started? That's a conversation that's going on. She's beyond that. That is, this was purposefully weaponized. It's not an accident. It is a weapon, a bioweapon that the Chinese apparently released into their own population so that someday it could hit the US. So that's there. That's it. One part of this, Bridget, that I kind of like is when she said, I don't believe in evolution. And it might seem weird for me to say that I like that, but isn't that just kind of like comforting old school Republicanism? Like just not believing in science. Like it's bad, but it's better than I believe Satanists are secretly eating all of America's children. Like, yeah, no, most Republicans back in the day just didn't believe in evolution and probably don't now, but yeah, just not believing in evolution. That's like just opposing same-sex marriage. It's like, oh, I get that GOP, that hateful anti-science GOP. It's like a throwback to the 90s.
Yeah, it's almost kind of quaint.
A little, yeah, in a weird way. Now that said, there are other parts of this. So first of all, yeah, if you don't believe in evolution, then you're probably not going to understand quite a bit about viruses, germs, how they're researched, how vaccines are produced. Like a lot of that is unfortunately going to be beyond your grasp. I would also throw out though that the reason they were looking into vaccines for the coronavirus was the fear that at some point it would infect people. And first of all, other coronaviruses have affected people. So the statement that just it didn't until they weaponized it is just 100% false. But for particular strains of coronavirus, they were trying to figure out, will we have a protection against this? So look, I understand all of that is beyond her. It's beyond Steve Bannon. He didn't have her on to talk about this, but I don't know. I feel like people need to understand a little bit about that to understand what might need to be done and all of that. Anyway, yeah. Any thoughts about that?
Well, I just want to say one thing, which is that this is really the problem with things like mis and disinformation. So I'm no scientist, so you know, I don't really know, but I think it's fair to ask the question and do some investigating about where any kind of, you know, virus comes from. But when people like Marjorie Taylor Greene just run on nonsense, completely take it to the extreme and say like, well, I believe this was a bioweapon and blah, 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 we're not able to have a measured conversation about what actually happened. It's like picking up the football and running with it. And so I really think that when people spread this kind of nonsense, the conversation that we're not having is like, well, is this worth investigating? What do experts say? You know, what is actually going on? We're not able to have that conversation because we're too busy talking about the kind of nonsense and anti-science mumbo jumbo that people like Marjorie Taylor Greene are spewing. And so I would just say that takes up so much room in the conversation that we're not even able to have legitimate conversations about what's going on.
Sure, let me give you one potential silver lining that is not going to be here, but in theory could be here, which is if you're going to have the idea that this was an intentional release of a genetically engineered bioweapon by the Chinese. If millions of Americans are gonna believe that, then one side effect you'd hope we'd at least get is, so let's take it seriously. If it's this super weapon that the commies released on us, let's wear masks, let's socially distance, let's get vaccinated. But we don't even get that. She spent every minute up until saying it was a Chinese bioweapon, saying it's made up, it's not actually killing that many people, you don't actually have to change your behavior, and any efforts to stop it from spreading as much as possible is some sort of fascist plot against good conservative Americans. I would have at least liked to have gotten that silver lining. Anyway, we are apparently running very short on time, so we are going to transition over to the main focus of Friday, which is this. It's Friday, and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, there has been clearly a lot of garbage, high quality garbage, such that our earlier story about Marjorie Greene didn't even land her in here. We're very lucky to have Bridget Todd on the show today for her first Garbage People of the Week. Bridget, who is your first ever garbage person?
I'm so glad you asked, I'm so excited. My inaugural garbage person is Oregon lawmaker Mike Newman, who was expelled from his job because he worked with insurrectionists in his state capitol. Back in December 21st, 2020, he let in a group of armed insurrectionists into the Capitol building. Later, just earlier this week, there was a video of him essentially giving them a how to break into the Capitol. He gave them his personal phone number. He dubbed it Operation Hall Pass and essentially laughed about the whole thing, lied about it. And now he is out of office. He was expelled, which of course. So he is my garbage person. He belongs in the trash.
Did you have it looks like you might have a video for this.
I do. This is him essentially training people how to break into the Capitol.
And we're talking about setting up Operation Hall Pass, which I don't know anything about. And if you accuse me of knowing something about it, I'll deny it. But there would be some person's cell phone, which might be. But that was just random numbers that I spewed out. That's not anybody's actual cell phone. And if you say, I'm at the west entrance during the session and text to that number there, that somebody might exit that door while you're standing there. But I don't know anything about that. I don't have anything to do with that. And if I did, I wouldn't say that I did. So, but anyway, that's the number that I didn't say was. Don't text that number, but a number like that, whatever. And make sure to say what entrance you're at, too.
What was that again? Those random numbers again?
Yeah, I didn't really say a number, but if I were to say a number, it might have been something like. You'd have to say what entrance you're at, but don't worry about that. Nobody said anything. And
just random numbers.
There's no there. So anyway.
Oh my God, Bridget.
Garbage belongs in the trash can.
Oh my, I hadn't seen that video. I mean, I knew about the guy and thankfully he's now been kicked out, but whew, like the instinct for self-preservation was just on air, devoured by the instinct to be the cool guy in the room. Like you could have actually hidden what you're doing to make it a little bit harder to make the case against you, but he wanted to have fun. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying, like, but you're on video right now.
And that's the thing.
You're clearly saying, you are saying, and that's gonna be used against you in a court of law potentially.
Yes, like if you're gonna do this, don't you're on video, homie. You're giving out your phone number. If you're gonna do this, at least do it in a dark parking lot or something where no one's videotaping you, where it's not gonna be played back later. You very clearly giving out your phone number to insurrectionists.
So he's garbage for supporting these insurrectionists. He's also just garbage at being an insurrectionist. You're just so fumbling and obvious. Be a slick cool guy while trying to be a slick cool guy. Anyway, Bridget, that's a very good garbage person. High marks for your first one ever. And now we turn to my garbage person of the week is going to be two actually, but it's the interaction between them, really. It's Tucker Carlson, but I'm gonna give it to Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution, because he was on Tucker Carlson last night and they had one of the worst interactions about childbirth and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Here they are.
It's quickly, do you find it interesting that they are so offended by fertility and nature and the idea that people reproduce and that's okay? You know, that we men and women come together and create new life. Like, the whole thing is repulsive to them. Why is that?
Well, I think it's because it started with the feminist movement that they felt that that impaired a woman's future. But I think it also reflects reality, Tucker, that the age when people are getting married, having children, buying a home, buying a house has gone from mid-20s to mid-30s. And our crisis right now is that we're not reproducing ourselves. We're about 1.8 rather than 2.1 or 2. And we're suffering from what? Prolonged adolescence. These children, or they have adult bodies, but they have the minds of children. They don't want to grow up. AOC is a good example of a person who's suffering from prolonged adolescence, and she said she doesn't want to have children because of climate change. So it's a phenomenon. I don't know if it's because of $1.7 trillion in student debt or the economy, but they just don't want to take off their training wheels and go out and experience life and its adventures and dangers.
Yeah, it's sad. Even sad for Sandy Cortez. You know, kind of missing the best part, the fun part, I think.
It is.
I'm gonna miss a couple of the terrible things about that, because there are so many. His continued insistence on calling her Sandy Cortez, like a child there. So much of that. So much, first of all, just factually, you gotta love, why don't they wanna have kids? I mean, some of them say it's because of the $1.7 trillion in student loan debt and the economy, but why don't they just take off the training wheels? That's not how that metaphor works at all. That's like saying, well, you know, the road to be on your bike on is only 2 inches wide and you fall over into magma and sharks with lasers on their heads. But I don't know, why don't they take off the training wheels? No, in that case, I want training wheels because it's really dangerous. You just made my case, you bozo. Those are all great reasons why people would be less inclined to have kids. Notably, they're not the reasons AOC has said she's worried about having kids. They are also lying about that. She has said that she's worried about what world she would be bringing her kids into when it comes to climate change. She didn't say, I'm not having kids because of that. And for them to say that, to have that interaction, that obviously planned interaction, just not that long after, in the wake of the Capitol attack, she did an Instagram live where she told Katie Porter that she was scared to die, that she would die on that day before being able to have kids. That was one of the things that she feared would stop her from having kids. Not, she's dumb and childish about climate change or whatever. That was one of the most condescending couple of minutes of video that I've seen in a very long time, Bridget.
Yeah, it's pretty disgusting. And I hate the way they just openly mock her very genuine pain. Like, she went through something pretty traumatic, and I hate to see them just openly mocking her for speaking up about it. I think it really sends a terrible message, and these people are both garbage.
Yeah, 100%. There's so much more about that that's terrible, and we unfortunately don't have time. Just disgusting. And like, yeah, it's the left that's really uncomfortable and fears sex and childbirth. That's definitely what it is. You guys want to outlaw literally everything fun, but whatever. That's my garbage person. That dude, look up his history. He said some fun things in the past. Anyway, what about you? What about the community garbage person of the week? Well, 32,000 of you voted this week, and here are the top five with a triple tie at numbers 5 through 3, I guess. At 6% of the vote, you have Magneto Woman for claiming vaccines cause magnetization. Really? She only got number 5? Also, number 5 at 6%, Ben Shapiro for teaching racial slur etiquette. And then also at number 6, Lauren Boebert for calling Representative Omar an honorary member of Hamas. That was a fun one. Well, that leaves at number 2 with 27% of the vote, US billionaires for not paying anything in federal taxes. Hey, fact check, it's not that they don't pay anything, they pay 0.1%. Anyway, but number 1 with 55% of the vote, an overwhelming bit of political garbage, Joe Manchin for blocking progress in the name of bipartisanship. Thank you to all of you who voted this week. Thank you for taking part. Great garbage person there. Bridget, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people see more of your work?
You can follow me on Instagram at Bridget Marie in DC or on Twitter at Bridget Marie. And you can check out my podcast, There Are No Girls on the Internet, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast on.
Thank you so much. And she'll also be joining us on the first hour of the Young Turks, the Power panel later today. So definitely stay tuned for that. Also stay tuned for Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie, which is coming up right after this. You can head to youtube.com/IndisputableTYT to watch it and to subscribe. His show is awesome. His guests have been awesome. You don't want to miss it. Thank you everybody for watching us throughout this week. We had a few technical hurdles, but we appreciate you sticking with us. Until next time, stay safe out there, stay sane out there, and I'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.